Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. I'll be reading the etymological article on characters and our character. It's a little wordplay on the characters in our language and our character, our moral character. So as you can see, this deals with morality. Because when you look at the word morality, character is an important word in there. This was published on the 3rd of December, 2014. Now, this started off as research into the word morality itself, another little word journey and weaving a larger tapestry from it. So the word morality, it's related to moral qualities, instruction, morals, manner, character, from the Latin moralis, proper behavior, manners. In Greek there is ethikos. And in Latin, there's mos, and that means a disposition. So the word morality was coined by Cicero to translate the Greek ethikos. You can see how morality and ethics are closely linked. Essentially the same, despite the battle on trying to differentiate them and make them different. It's just like trying to say that passion is different from pathos, or pathos is different from passion, even though one's a Latin word for the Greek word. They have a little bit of difference, but they essentially mean the same. So if we look at disposition, that's an arrangement, an order. It's a state, like a state of mind. Then we look at dispose, from disposition. Dispose is control, regulate. It's dis, which means apart, and poner, so disponer. And poner is to put or place. So to place apart, to put apart, is what dispose is. So when you're doing that, I guess you're controlling and regulating something. You're setting things apart. You have control and regulation to do that. And we have dispose, and then from dispose we have position. So it's position, then there's disposition. And that's how the word got formed. So position, act or fact of placing, a situation, position, affirmation. And more of the breakdown on poner, put place, from apo, off, away, and siner, to leave, let. So it's to leave away, to leave off. Morals are qualities of behavior, manner, character, disposition. Morals are an arrangement, order, right? Because that's the goal of it. When you dispose yourself in a state of mind and you arrange and order your thoughts, your emotions, and then you act on them, you're controlling and regulating, you're placing apart. I think this is what I'm about to discuss there, but I'm just emphasizing this from the emboldened words. You're controlling and regulating yourselves apart from other people who may be living less morally. So you're setting things apart, because that's what truth does from falsity. That's the purpose of morality. If everything was moral, then you wouldn't be setting anything apart, because everything would be moral. So morality is because things can be immoral, and that's the state of our world, and it's been like that for a long, long time, where there's been conditions of immorality and morality, of falsity and truth, evil and good. So morals are an arrangement, order, and create a state of being from the will to control and regulate ourselves, placed apart from the unregulated passions, desires, whims, wants of the carnal, beastly, lower base, animalistic consciousness. So we have, this makes more sense. You can look at it in terms of the aggregate, but you can look at it in terms of yourself. You place yourself apart. This is the alchemical inner work, where you divide things inside of you. You control and regulate yourself. This is part of sovereign self-dominion. It's self-control and self-mastery. So you're controlling and regulating yourself, pulling apart pieces, and you're leaving things. So scenario from position, you're leaving, you're letting it behind. So in alchemical process, you seek to learn the truth and morality so that you can compare it to yourself and then learn what is wrong, see the darkness, shadow, demon, negative, evil, immorality, and wrong within you, and then you can learn to let go of it and disintegrate it, disassemble it, deconstruct it from who you are, and then you let go of it. You put it apart, place it apart from you, and you rebuild yourself that way. So you place apart from the unregulated passions, desires, whims, wants of the carnal, beastly, lower, base, animalistic consciousness. It's the process of evolving consciousness by letting go of those lower desires, those lower passions, the things that keep us in amoral living as immoral beings. To affirm ourselves into a position and situation of higher order living in alignment with the will of creation, higher self, true self. Beings who can discern morals are of a higher order consciousness, and this sets them apart from others who are not capable of harnessing this force of good to such a degree of potential manifestation. With this higher order consciousness comes higher order creative capabilities for good or evil. So you can... Some people can evolve their consciousness and learn of good and evil, but they choose the evil path. So you can have more creative potential with knowledge of yourself in the world to do evil rather than choosing the right path of truly higher order consciousness. This is the ultimate personal responsibility we have to truth and morality, the force of good. Failure to understand reality and navigate it with humility under natural moral law will result in the creation of evil and devolution towards chaos. Ethics is the science of morals, the study of morals. So you can see how morals is the morals themselves, and then ethics is the science and study of, which I've had people argue with me because they don't understand the etymology. They don't even look at the etymology. So they just want to argue. From ethos, moral character, also related to ethos, custom. And we look at ethos, habitual character, and disposition. So again, ethics would be the science of morals, the study of morals. And ethos, well, that would be the morals themselves. As we saw above, character, disposition, habit, custom, manners, well, that's exactly what morality and moral was saying above. And this comes from the Proto-Indo-European root, S, and then W in parentheses, and then the E, so S-W-E. And then we have custom, which is a habit, usage, way, practice, tradition, familiarity, becoming used to, accustom oneself, and again from the Proto-Indo-European S-W-E, which means oneself as an idiom. And we have idiom, which is to appropriate to oneself, from idios, which is personal or private. Particular to oneself. And also the word identity comes from that same sort of root of I and then dem. It's idem, and it's related in some way, but it's not exactly the same thing. Just wanted to mention that since we're relating identities to oneself, well, this is a similar representation. Ethics is the study or science of morals, the arrangement and order of rules that sets moral apart from immoral, truth apart from falsity, reality apart from unreality. Ethics are now associated with the socially constructed customs, manners, and traditions in this larger context of setting standards in society for people to live in, quote, harmony and, quote, integrate well. So, I had previously differentiated morals from ethics as morals, as the true way, true morality of right and wrong, and ethics was more of society's impositions on what is right and wrong according to the customs. So you can see how you have the customs of yourself and you have the customs of society and the manners of society and the traditions of society. So this is all included in the word for ethic. So you can see how it gets twisted into a conformist aspect. And there's no problem with the conformist aspect as long as it's based in truth and morality and good and right. Yes, everyone has to conform to natural moral law. Everyone has to conform to the right codes of conduct, the way and the path. But when society does it as a false ethics, and they use the word and they create customs, manners, and traditions, well, those are usually all bullshit based in culture. It's a cult. You're just brainwashed into, oh, well, you have to wear a burqa and you get stoned if you get raped, and if you get raped, well, we're going to rape you again, and all these screwed up Sharia law, all this bullshit. It's demented minds convincing other weak minds that to accept demented rules. Then they become customs, manners, and traditions. So then it's proposed as, oh, this is the way to live in harmony and integrate together. We got to live as one. And oh, this is the way to heaven and the afterlife and all this other bullshit. It's all bullshit belief that weak minds buy into because they're insecure. They don't know themselves. They don't know how to be independent and think for themselves. They don't know what is the truth? What is moral? What is right? They have no clue because they're so conditioned into falsity. So every religionist is in this boat. Why? Because they are a religionist. They've chosen to acclimate their own independence to an acquiescence of a central authority and a central doctrine, and they just live by that as a robot. Ethic and custom are rooted in an earlier word, SWE, which is the meaning of idiom, appropriate to oneself, make particular to you. If one setting the standard of so-called ethics or custom is wrong, and no one corrects it, then it continues to be wrong. This is the case with human societies everywhere, to varying degrees of immorality. Each person is capable of knowing morality, and possibly knowing it deeper than others who think they know it deeply. Yet few embark on this journey towards truth, morality, and greater self-realization. So as I was saying, people don't want to learn it, even though one person is capable of overturning what a million or a billion people believe that is false. We're not doing it individually. So you only have a few people who can see the lies, but since everyone believes in the customs, manners, and traditions of falsity, well, it keeps perpetuating. More people need to awaken to the true self, higher will, and align themselves with that, the will of creation, you know, conceptually, all these things. It just makes more sense. Or else you just say, well, align with the truth, and you don't. And you stay away from the concept of true self, higher will, all that. So you just make it basic. Well, it's about aligning with truth, love, good, right, morality. If you want to stay away from the other speculative concepts, just keep it grounded that way. So we have character, which is an engraved mark, right? That's what we do as a character. When we write things, it's an engraved mark. It's also a symbol or imprint on the soul. Ah, so here we go. That's why we have the word character to reflect morality, because it's supposed to reflect, quote, spirit, which is the, quote, soul. But that's all morality. That's all it is. They're just keywords for morality, because that's what the, quote, soul and, quote, spirit is. Because you have the law comes from the Most High. The Most High is the higher, the Most High's will is the will of God, and that will creates the law of God, conceptually, not of the Bible. Forget about that anthropomorphized, idiotic father figure. So, the will of the Spirit is the will of God, the will of the Most High, the will of the higher self, and that's the higher will, and that's the spirit. And that's spirit is just, it's all about spiritual is the will of the spirit. So spiritual is the will of the spirit, which is natural moral law, an aspect of it. So to live morally is to be spiritual. So the symbol or imprint on the soul, the engraved mark, is when you do things, so you have character, your character is represented by your actions of your body while you're living. So that imprints upon who you are. Who you are is a reflection of what you do. Who you are here and now, from birth to death, is a reflection of what you do. So you want to do evil, well, you become evil. You want to do good, you become good. Stop doing evil, well, then you stop becoming evil. And that comes from the Proto-Indo-European root, G-H-E-R, so ger or care, as I explained in the article on etymology of kind, kin, genus, and care. Care comes from G-A-R, and G and K and C are interchangeable, so it's ger, but it's ker, or it's ger, but it's ker. So character, it's a scraping and a scratching. So that's what you do when you engrave and mark things, right? You scrape and scratch. So that's why your actions reflect who you are, because every action you take of evil or not evil, well, that puts a scraper and a scratch, an engraving on who you are, your character, your moral essence, who you are choosing to be. So here's my explanation. Character is a part of our nature, what matters. Well, who we become as a, I don't know. Because you have human nature as the true nature versus our condition. So there's the two aspects to nature, that higher aspect, and then, well, character is a part of our nature, what matters, yeah. Since it reflects morality, and our true nature is morality, so I guess that still stands. Character is multiple as well. We have a character, but it's not singular in scope. There are the characteristics, attributes, properties, and qualities we have that make us who we currently are. Language has symbols that have characters of their own. They represent aspects of reality. As a character can be marked onto something, so too are we marked. Character can be applied as a way to view ourselves, the soul, quote soul, in terms of the qualities of consciousness we currently have. That's why soul is an individuation, because we're attributing it as an individuated aspect of the higher self, the most high, the spirit. It's an aspect of that as we individuate. So we associate ourselves from birth to death as having our own soul, because we're different from everybody else. So it's just a conceptual way of doing, of understanding ourselves in relation to other people, and also in relation to a higher self, or the higher self, because it's not individual higher selves, it's one eye awareness, it's just pure awareness, that's the higher self. And it gets individuated here into physicality, that spirit consciousness goes into creating reality, all of existence, and then the physical body vehicles made of matter are either capable of expressing consciousness, aspects of the pure consciousness, pure awareness, as their own individuated awareness in physicality, but it requires physicality to develop that individuality, and therefore an identity forms from that individuality that is capable of expressing consciousness and free will, and this only applies to animals. That's why different animals do have different personalities. Because they're capable of developing these personalities and identities as an expression of the all-one pure consciousness, but that is individuated into matter itself. And other realities work different way. Other entities, they may be individual personality identities, but that's the way it works from their level of existence where we are not, we require physicality, and we're at the forefront of evolution as I see it. So they are marks of identity which define aspects of reality or ourselves. That's what characters are. We write characters about reality. So there are marks of identity. We identify with symbols. That's what symbols are for, to reflect reality. We create symbols and language in order to reflect an understanding of reality. So every mark we make about a symbol is an identity which defines aspects of reality or ourselves. When we look at moral character, that is what defines us. It's a mark on our, quote, soul, on ourselves, on the individuation from birth to death that marks who we are. After death, well, you're not there anymore. You've put in your karma to the world to create the current condition as it is. And then the afterlife is, well, the pure awareness, the pure consciousness keeps reincarnating. It's all it that keeps coming, that keeps creating what is. It's the, at the base level, it's all that one. It's all the all that individuates, and, you know, the spark of the flame and the drop in the ocean or the wave on, in the ocean. It's a part of it, but it has form. It's distinct. It's not formless. So when you get form, then you have your the ability to be an ego personality identity construct without the form in this reality. Well, well, there's rocks and stuff that have form, but they don't have the complexity of the physical body vehicle in order to express consciousness and free will. This is in my understanding of the conception of God, Spirit, all one, and how it could possibly create reality. So these marks and identities are on us as we live, because you have to do things. The marks and identities are in reality to reflect reality, and the marks of our identity are a reflection of what we do. That's why it's refers to character applies to us as well, because they're marks on us, on our persistent I-ness, which is always there, just the awareness, which is why we are the I am that I am, and we're God, because it's all the same awareness, it's all the same, but it's individuated when we are as an ego personality identity. We develop different personalities and identities and impositions and conditions. So these are, we all have different character and different marks, because we all do different things and we're born at different times and different places. None of us are the same. That's why we have an identity, and our character defines who we are, and we can all coalesce towards the same character by doing right and not wrong. And we'll have different actions still, and we'll still be individuals, but we'll harmonize more towards a conformity to truth and morality. And that will make us more similar and more the same, even though we'll be different and still be have differences and individualities and identities, but we'll be the same under the truth. And that's where you get the unity, the true unity on things that matter, which is morality. So these are qualities that are scraped or scratched onto us, or objects in reality, unseen marks, like could be done with a pointed stake and engraved onto some surface such as clay, which is the original one to make an engraving. So we're like a clay. You know, you could say man was molded from clay, and then the breath of life was breathed into our nostrils. I believe that's how the story of Adam works, or something. Or maybe it's earth, the humus, so human. Yeah, so I think it's clay, and then you breathe into the nostrils, and there's the life of the man. So we're clay, because we can be marked, because we are from the earth, with the breath of God. So the pure awareness, the eye awareness, well, that's breathed into us, and that's where we can experience awareness and consciousness. But since we are clay, you know, metaphorically, it's all metaphors, similes, allegories to explain, to try to explain an understanding of us, but it's all symbolic metaphors. So you look at clay, it's not literal clay. Stop taking the stories as literal. So the clay is malleable. We're all malleable. An ego personality identity construct is malleable because it's constructed from our impositions from birth to death. And we can take charge of those impositions and conditions and change ourselves if we want. And we're malleable at any time. That's why we're chameleons and copycats. Because we just copy things when we grow up and we learn and it becomes us through positive reinforcement or negative reinforcement. And we all develop differently because we all have different, we're all in different places at different times. And we have different experiences. So it all creates an individual ego personality identity construct that's not like others. But there's similarities because we all live in the same reality. And there's similar impositions and similar, and truth is truth and lies are lies. And we accept lies and we accept truth. And that shapes us into what we believe about ourselves, the self-image and the worldview constructs. It's all related to the same thing. So the qualities that are scraped or scratched onto us, or objects in reality, unseen marks, engraved such as clay. So we keep engraving things on us as clay. We are clay with the breath of life. And then when we die, will we go back to the earth? And then the breath of life, well, that's the pure awareness that never dies. It's in everything, you know, conceptually in the concept of creation. You know, God is everywhere. God is in everything. You can look at a tree or look at a rock or look at the earth, and there's God, you know, conceptually. Quote, God. There's the spirit. Quote, spirit. There's the awareness. There's everything. There's consciousness. Consciousness is everywhere. But it's all conceptual. It's not human consciousness, because consciousness as a human, or as a, you know, other animals as well, they're expressive. We can express consciousness. It's not consciousness just as a manifested physical form from the immaterial, unseen, unphysical, coalescing into a material form. So, you know, it goes from the all-one and then it goes to the quantum field of energy, since the all-one awareness, energy singularity is energy, and then it goes to the quantum field and then it builds up from there. From you have the So you have the All Source One consciousness that makes itself into an energy field, then the seven dimensions, and those would be the implicate order, the quantum field possibly, and then that becomes various levels of quantum whatever in other realms and realities that eventually those seven build up to create the last four, which is time, and then the three of space, which is where we live in the upper part. And it's based on the lower part that built the upper part, because the lower part is, you know, the quantum stuff and other whatever dimensions of energy that create us or whatever, and who knows, just conceptual. But you have the math and whatever that can show seven dimensions before, or 11 dimensions in total, and the four, three, space, one, time, and then seven other ones. So those seven again, the universal laws, you know, the seven universal laws, etc. So 7 and 4 and 11 are important numbers. But where was I going with that? Oh yeah, expressions of consciousness. So when you go up in physicality that gets created, well, it doesn't have the expressions of consciousness. It's just physical. It's all, everything's made of consciousness. You know, it's all made of energy. It's all made of consciousness. It's all made of awareness, etc., etc. It's all made of spirit. It's all made of God, you know. The concept as it goes. So in this way, only the complexity of physical vehicle bodies that are capable of expressing consciousness can do so, and can express free will, and can interact, and have thoughts, emotions, and actions, and they can move around and do what they want with their free will, and they have creative capacities to create things. And the higher you go up in complexity, you reach humans who have the greatest capacity to create both good and evil. Other animals are more amoral. They do not have the capacity for morality, nor the creative capacity, which is the more creative capacity you have, which when you reach humans, the greatest capacity, the more capability you have of expressing morality potentially through an understanding of your higher order consciousness. So when you get to humans, higher order consciousness, who can understand morality and live right, we also have the ability to create much more evil or good. And that's why there's this, the responsibility we have to good, because we can create such evil because of our greater degree of consciousness expressions and free will capacity. It requires morality as a checking, as a check and balance, because we don't have predators. We can do things and run out of balance, but we're the only ones who can set it right. Other animals, if they, like rabbits or other animals that overpopulate and overtake their geographical location, usually there's the predators in this quote, false balance and false harmony, just as a way to keep things in check, because they don't have higher order consciousness to regulate themselves. We are capable of self-dominion, self-mastery, and self-control. That's part of enlightenment. Other animals are lower order. They run more, they don't only have, but they run more on a basic programming of physicality, or the boundaries, limits, and laws. It was boundaries, limits. Anyways, there's another word I use usually to refer to the basic programming aspect of physicality. And as you go up in complexity, you develop, when you get to animals, you have more consciousness capacities of expression of thoughts, emotions, and actions, but you still have basic programming. Just as us, we still have basic programming. And that's more the lower qualities, the lower animalistic capacities. But our animalistic capacities are worse than other animals, because we have more capacity to indulge in the lower capacities and go crazy with them and create more evil and debaucherous, degenerate ways of living than other animals do. So we have the responsibility to morality, because that's the self-checking mechanism, or else we destroy ourselves. And in lower animals, and in the programmed, limited boundaries of nature, they have some capacity to self-regulate, but they're not as conscious as us. They have consciousness, thoughts, emotions, actions, and free will, but not as much as us, so they don't have the capacity to understand as well. And as I mentioned before, some animals do break out and they become friends with things that are supposed to be their prey, and they take care of them and have fun and play along. But that's why I say nature has a false balance and harmony, because it's not really a balance and harmony of everyone getting along. It's a harmony just to make things work. You're just making it work. So just so that the lower order beings don't overpopulate and get out of control, because they run more from lower base, animalistic, carnal, fleshly programming and just aspects of survival. So they just, like rabbits, they just keep screwing and screwing and making babies and babies. So you need a predator, because it's more basic living. Whereas us, we have higher order consciousness and higher order living potentials. And that's why we have the requirement to learn about ourselves and reality and proper conducts of behavior, so that we do not kill ourselves as other lower animals would do if predators weren't there, in this false harmony and false balance of lower order nature. We have to balance and harmonize ourselves. That's the gift and the responsibility we have. We are our own predators. We create a predator, dominator, psychopathic way of living, and we prey on ourselves. We are our own predators when we are imbalanced into non-self-dominion, non-sovereignty, non-self-control, non-enlightenment. We're dual. We're on the checkerboard floor, walking the path of both good and evil, living amorally, doing evil while thinking we're doing good, and doing good while we think we're doing evil, or whatever. It's all mixed up, and we're just living whatever way we're living, and we're not thinking, we're not developing ourselves, we're not developing sovereignty and thinking and self-dominion and self-control. So that's why we have to regulate ourselves as our own masters, or other people become masters and they become the predators over our lives, and it's a predatory, dominator, psychopathic system and hierarchy, and it's all survival, domination based, which is just a mirroring of the lower order nature of survival and domination as a self-regulating mechanism. So we self-regulate ourselves as lower order base consciousness beings because we're not developing the sovereignty, self-dominion, self-control, self-mastery, and enlightenment as a being that recognizes the importance of aligning our thoughts, emotions, and actions in themselves, but also the more important aspect of uniting it with truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will, God, source, spirit, all, etc. We have to align ourselves with that in order to regulate ourselves, or else we're going to be, in the aggregate, regulating ourselves through a corrupted, predatory, dominator, psychopathic way of living, which mirrors the lower order, animalistic, carnal, fleshly, beastly nature. I hope that makes sense. It's something I just came up with now. It just makes a lot of sense that we mirror lower order, and then we become predators for others, become predators for us, and other humans become predators for other humans as a self-regulating mechanism because we choose to live amorally as animals. So that's why you can look at the elites as fulfilling a lower order, natural order, which isn't really order, it's just a false harmony and a false order and a false balance. But they are so much in a degenerate, false self, not in the true self, higher self, in higher will of natural moral law, truth, love, good, right, morality. They have taken up the lower order, carnal, fleshly, beastly nature of amoral living in immorality, and they become the predators in a predatory, dominator, psychopathic system that somewhat mirrors the lower order nature, false natural order, false balance, and false harmony, just in order to keep things progressing in evolution of higher order complexity, so that one particular species doesn't overtake the habitat and destroy everything. That's why there is this evil in nature, because it's amoral. There is no care. It doesn't have feelings. It just, things progress and there's a checks and balances. Because they are amoral, they are lower order, they don't have higher order capacities for self-control and self-development and improvement and betterment. That's why we are at the pinnacle of evolution right now on the planet. And that's why the four later dimensions of time and space, where we live in 4D, we don't live in 3D. 3D, as I've mentioned in other audios, would be just only space. Well, where's the movement? If you don't have time, there's no movement. There's nothing. There's nothing. Non-existence. Play a movie and press pause, and there's just space. Well, there's nothing. Nothing going on when nothing's moving. It's non-existence. When you just have space. You need time for reality to exist. So that's why we live in 4D. So I hope that makes sense. It makes a lot of sense to me, what I just came up with, but it's fresh in my mind, so it is an inducted concept, but so far in my deductions on the spot, it seems to hold pretty solid. But as I say, it could be wrong. I need more. Normally I don't just spurt things out like that without going through them, which is why I have a lot of notes and work already done, but I haven't published it because I still have to go through it a second time to make sure it's non-contradictory, because I do pride myself on logic and non-contradiction, because that's how you make sense of reality and yourself. So you have to make sure things do not contradict. But so far it seems very accurate, as it is in line with my other notes on lower order nature versus higher order nature, and how lower order nature does not care. It does not have care. It's not a thing. It doesn't have an identity. It doesn't care. It's not a consciousness. That's why there's the will of nature isn't the lower order nature. It's higher order nature. It's not, oh, the will of the green and the rocks and the planets and the universe. No. And not in that respect. There's two aspects of nature. This is why I have an infographic of conceptual levels. And in there I put all the different levels of different concepts I have. So there's reality, two levels, truth has two levels, care has four, the great work has two, identity has two, ignorance has two, self-realization has two, you know, there's mirrors has three. So I should publish that at some point. It's a constantly a work in progress. The more I realize the dual or triple or quadruple natures of concepts and the different levels of progression in that concept, well, I write them down. But anyway, so we're at the forefront of evolution, and we have to self-regulate ourselves, or we're going to be regulated through a mimicking of the lower order nature, which will put us into a predatory, dominator, psychopathic, hierarchical way of living, where we just enslave others and enslave ourselves, and we work up the ladder to not only be slaves for others, but we want to have slaves working for us under us, so that we have more privileges and a more easy way of living. And it's way more exploitative than the lower order nature, and it creates a false balance and a false harmony in this psychopathic, predatory, dominator system of living we live in. It's not real harmony, it's not real order, it's not real balance, just like it isn't in lower order nature. It's cruel, and it's, you know, there's no care there. It's just boundaries, limits, and laws of survival. So the rabbits have sex and multiply and multiply and multiply. They're just following basic survival programming instincts of the basic level of their biological, physical programming, and they also have aspects of consciousness and thought, emotion, and action, and free will, coupled with that stronger, baser aspect, whereas we have a stronger consciousness capacity and free will that can overturn our lower order, lower consciousness, carnal, beastly, fleshly, amoral, animalistic living capacities, where we don't care about morality and we just do whatever for survival, which is what other animals tend to do. But they're not as perverted and as degenerate as us in the potential for survival and doing whatever we want amorally, to do immoral things. Since we have greater capacities of consciousness and free will, we can go even deeper into the lower animalistic fleshly desires and carnal beastly nature, more so than other animals of a lower order. Because we have higher order capacities of power and creation, we can create more evil and more immorality than lower order, more basic consciousness compared to us, that cannot create as much evil as we can create. And this is the ultimate responsibility we have to truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, true self, higher will, God, source, spirit, all, is we have the responsibility to align ourselves with our human nature, our true nature, which is to become a real human being, because it's all the same thing, it's all the same model. It's not, oh, you got to become your true self, your true nature, which is, you got your own true nature and true self and higher self, and I got my own true nature and true self and higher self. No, it's all the same true nature. It's all the same higher self, true nature, human nature. It's all the same, because it's one thing. It's the one universal. The essence and the form. And the identity comes from the species level at the universal individual level, and we're looking at Aristotle's metaphysics in this conceptual framework. So you have our essence and the form that creates our body. This is another theory, if you look at Rupert Sheldrake's material, the morphogenetic field, and this is another note I came up with last night. You have the morphogenetic field for our physical aspects and the basic biological organization of the body vehicle. So there's always a morphogenetic form for horses and cats and different species, different subspecies, that they all have the same form, even though they're variations in the form. It's all the same form. And people think that comes from genetics, but if you look at Rupert Sheldrake's material and you understand metaphysics and you understand where the form is supposed to come from the universal individual and not the particularized or the programming in the particularized aspect, and maybe there's a reflection of the morphogenetic field in the DNA programming, etc., whatever, getting too speculative, but so the morphogenetic field is for the physical body, and you have epigenetics, and that's where our ego personality identity construct comes from, because from birth to death, we're into an environment, and the environment, as I've explained in other audios as to where the ego personality identity construct comes from, the environment is the place where we are born at a specific time in a specific place, we have specific parents, we have specific life conditions, impositions and conditions from society and people around us, positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, and these things all create unique people. That's why we're all unique, even though we're all the same. We're all the same eye awareness. We're all the same we're all the same potential to aspire to, which is the human nature, the true nature, the true self, the higher self, the higher will. That's what we have to aspire to at a basic level before we are an ego personality identity construct that is just pure awareness that doesn't have an interaction with the world as a baby is, with just pure base programming. And then through, that's why they can't see things in reality, or at least they can't see very far. And then eyesight develops, and then they learn to differentiate. At first, everything is just everything. Everything's just one for the babies. And then there's the mother and them. They identify with the mother because the mother's there early on for them to develop an association and an attachment and identity with. And then that develops to other things, and they see things from things, separate from things. I think Ken Wilber has mentioned this a bit. I think I might have gotten this aspect of information and clarity from him in some respect. And that so the babies see everything as one, then they differentiate. I think this is I don't remember what they're called, but they're pre-something and then post-something, post-identity and pre-identity or something. So you have the pre, which is everything's one, and then you separate and individuate, and then so that's when we become an ego personality identity construct that develops through impositions of our environment, which is unique to each one of us, which is why we all have unique ego personality identity constructs, and that's epigenetics. It's affecting us through the environment. So just like the environment can affect us in a genetic way, so it's not a purely genetic, it's an epi something else. So I just refer to it as epigenetics, just like the morphogenetic field, which forms the body, and all the bodies have similar construct. Epigenetics, in relation to the ego personality identity construct, because we are a reflection of our impositions, conditions, and other influences, you know, possibly, quote, astrology and the frequencies of the planets affecting us. Maybe that's true. I don't know. There's different aspects, and that's how I view how we are created, and that's how we are chameleons and shapeshifters, because we can become anything. And all the impositions we have, well, we just copy from them. That's what babies do when they're early. That's why children copy and they imitate things, because we are copycats. We're shapeshifters. We can become anything. We are clay. So do you understand the analogy? That's why I had to go into this like 15-minute side topic again, repeating what I've repeated in other audios, but also introducing new material and understanding as I hash through all this. But the clay is malleable, just like I've been saying in other articles previous to me starting all these audios from the older articles I've done. We're clay, we're chameleons, we're shapeshifters, we're malleable. That's why I say we can reform ourselves. You know, I've written in Truth is Love, I think, back in the beginning of 2014, how we're malleable and we can become anything. That's why the process of self-transformation and alchemy, we can remake ourselves into anything we want. Not physically, like, oh, I'm going to become a dragon or whatever. I'm talking about the ways that count in our ego personality identity construct, which is our self-image and our worldview, our sense of self and our sense of the world. We can alter that which will reflect our thoughts, emotions, and actions and how we engage in the world. So we can always reshape ourselves, reshape our character, reshape the clay, and have different markings on the clay, different engravings, different characters, right? And we can always become different. We can better ourselves because we are the higher order animals that are capable of this because we have higher degrees of consciousness expressions and free will expression versus lower order animals which have less of this capacity. All right. Enough of a 20-minute side topic there. To continue, the engravings can also be changed as our consciousness can evolve or devolve, and we can alter, and we can alter the environment to create new things. So just as we can be, I've mentioned this before, how we are affected by reality and we affect reality. So just as much as we are conditioned by reality, we also reflect back into reality and alter the conditions. So we can alter the environment to create new things. We can change our consciousness and evolve, and we can change the environment. That's how we change reality. That's how we are co-creators of reality. Not of the universe and this pseudo-spiritual false interpretation of the double-slit experiment where human consciousness creates the, you know, the collapse of the wave particle into a matter, the wave particle duality into a particle into matter and all that stuff. That's a flawed understanding. People don't do their homework properly. So we get to manner, and it's a kind, sort, of variety. So we get to manner, kind, sort, and variety. You can relate it back to metaphysics in the kind, in the species level, which, as I said, is where the essence, form, and identity comes from, in the metaphysical conceptual framework. And from Old French, manière, which is a fashion, method, manner, way, appearance, bearing, custom. So you can see how all this stuff all relates. That's why morality has manner and character in it. So a sort and variety. You know, a sort and variety is moral versus immoral. You're going to act in a certain way. It's a kind of action, a variety of action versus another variety of action. From manus, so again, manner comes from manus, hand, strength, power over. Another cognate, Old English mund, a hand, protection, guardian. And then I have in square brackets, hold is also guard and protect, as I did. Hold was discussed in, I think, two articles on family ownership and slavery, as well as kind, kin, genus, and care. So you hold things in your hand, you have grasp over it, you protect it, guard it, and that relates to, you know, ownership and things like that. So again, bearing good and evil, it's I think it relates to that article and audio as well. Or we're carrying oneself, a deportment, right? When you carry things, you carry yourself, your character, you carry your character, your manners, it's your deportment. And we have bear again. I've already went into this in other places. To bear, to bring forth, produce, to endure, sustain, give birth, carry a burden. So when you bear evil, you have to carry the burden and until we're capable of removing evil from existence by sending it back. So go read, don't go read my articles. Whenever there's an audio or video, you need to listen to it, not read the article. The articles, sometimes it's three quarters, half, or a quarter of the length of the audio, because I go and I elaborate on many more things. So, more info in the From Bearing Good and Evil article. Now we come to carry, which is related to bear. From the root kers, K-E-R-S, which is to run. So running, flowing, from the Old French courant. And courir, from Latin, to run, move quickly. And again, this is from current. So carry, car, current. A car moves, it runs. It's all from curs, to run. The current runs, the water current, electric current. Our currencies of time and attention. Time is related to the element water. Time, change, and action are all related. Because in time, things change in time, and it's related to action and movement. So we are the ones who can have the most capacity for action and change in the world, and that's why we are the time binders in terms of Alfred Korzybski's model, and maybe other models related to time, because our deeds, our actions, are reflected in time and change. And the current of currencies of time and attention, well, that's what allows us to focus on creating in the actions of good or in evil. Where does our time and attention go? Does it go on useless things, on superficial things, which keep perpetuating the current condition because we're not focusing on the knowledge of good and evil in order to create in the good? So where we're running to as a species, as individuals and a species, is based on, is the currency. Where we're running is the currency. So what's our most important currencies? Well, the quote spiritual, you know, the unseen currencies are our time and attention. The attention, the awareness. And that comes from the pure awareness, the I. And we have our ego personality identities, which are impositions and conditions of our environment so that we can live in the environment and interact. And there's aspects of falsity in it. The I awareness that always remains constant from birth to death, well, that's where we need our time and attention to change our ego personality identities and our sense, our worldview, our understanding of the world, our understanding of ourselves, our sense of selves, our self-image, our self-concept. We can change that and run in different directions. We can use our current to change where we're going. We can use our currencies of time and attention to change where we are going. And then from manner where there was deportment, oh no, so bearing, sorry, carry and bearing, carrying oneself, deportment. So you carry yourself, right? The way you carry yourself is also related to character and the manner in which you live. So again, we see how bearing with relation to how we carry ourselves and comportment and the manner, what we're bearing, the appearance of how we express ourselves, the way we live, the manner we live, the method we live, the fashion in which we live. Because the manner is the hand, the strength, the power over what we do. And we get to deportment is to behave. So now we get from morality, now we're getting to behavior. Right? To behave. From deportment. So deportment is to behave. It's how we carry ourselves. It goes back to bearing, which is why deportment was in bearing, to carry of oneself, carrying of oneself. So deportment from deport, which is from D, which just means from or off, and porter, to carry. Deporter, to carry off, to carry from. And then we have port, which is a going. You know, you have a going, a passage, the ports of a boat or whatever, the port. It's a going or a passage. And it's also to lead, pass over, and the cognates in Greek, poros, a journey, passage, way, and there's a pyrein, to pierce and run through. So you can see to lead, going, journey, passage, way, is related to behavior and carrying off, carrying oneself, our deportment. So you can see how this all relates to our character and what's in how we mold ourselves as clay. Where are we going? The journey, and we have to use a currency, the way we carry ourselves, the bearing, deportment, in order how we behave is with our currency, where we're going, where we're running to. So the journey, passage, and way. And that's, you know, the way and path, the right way and the right path. The way and the path is part of the journey. And this is the journey and the passage of initiation, which is why crossing over doesn't mean about dying, and it's not about going to the afterlife. Your afterlife begins when your stupid, ordinary life, you kill it because you're coming out of the grave, right? That's why when you're in the grave, in the coffin, in the tomb, in the darkness, because you don't have light, because you're not alive, right? You're not alive, so you're dead. You're not alive because you're not in the afterlife. You've not been reborn from being dead in the tomb of the condition into falsity of the way we live. So when you begin the journey on the spiritual path, on the way to greater attainment of truth and morality, well, that's the passage, that's the way and the path, that's going up the mountain. And that's where you're initiated into the way and the path, beginning the journey. So you're crossing over from being dead in the coffin in the tomb, you've crossed over, and now you're on the spiritual journey. Now you're in the spirit. Now you're alive. That's the real life, right? The spirit is the real life. The Ankh is the key to life. And this is, in my new natural law presentation, it's going to be huge. There's too much work in it. Anyways, I'm going to talk about the Ankh, and the Ankh relates to the key of life, which is, you know, the key to the spirit and the soul. Well, that's it. This is what it's about. It's about initiation, being crossed over. It's like a cross. The Ankh is like a cross. It's a variation of the cross. It has the Tau cross, which is the letter T, and has the oval, which is Ru. And Ru is a road, a path, a way, in French, Ru. And it's Rue des Femmes, and it's feminine. And it relates to a mouth, and also the womb, the uterus, and birth, and being rebirthed. And that's why when you are reborn, you're rebirthed into the way, into the passage, into the spirit, into the soul, into the aspects of leading towards the true self, higher will, the way up the mountain, the passage, the way, the journey, the path. Everything relates. Once you look at symbolism for the symbolism, and you don't buy into the stories, and you don't buy into later stories that used symbolism that wasn't understood, and then they perverted it and altered it and added things, and it got all twisted, and then there's literal interpretations, and then the stories become true. You have to look past all the literal aspects of narratives and stories in the past, and you have to look simply at the symbols and make sense of them as a reflection of reality. You have to start from the ground up and understand things from the ground up, from reality. And that's what truth is based on, is from reality, from the particulars, you can gain aspects of the universal. We have to always come back to the ground, or else you're unfounded. So yeah, that was a side topic there, but that's going to be in my natural law work. People are not going to like what I have to say, and it shatters a lot of fantasy beliefs we have about spiritual concepts, which I refer to as pseudo-spiritual. And anyways, so the journey, passageway, all has to do, as I'm saying, the real afterlife, the real immortality, is not that you're immortal. You're already immortal if you consider your secondary aspect of being, which is not an identity in itself, is the pure awareness, the I awareness. That's the same for everybody. It's just pure awareness. There is no identification with anything in reality, in material universe. It's just pure awareness, unadulterated, unconditioned awareness. That's the pure consciousness. That's why these concepts derive, because you can come to this understanding through meditation or other means, or just conceptually you can understand it. And just by understanding how we are formed, that's how I came to understand it, by how we are formed individually as individual identities. That's how I got to understand the ego personality identity construct, and the conditioning and the impositions from the environment, and then what's there before that. I got to that through all of this quote spiritual understanding of the I am, of who we are. Because when you recognize you're not the body, because when you're born and until you die, you're still the same person, even though you change so many ways in how you view yourself in the world, and your body changes, everything changes, so you're not your body. You're not how you, well, this is the you in terms of the energy source of consciousness. There's the you as an ego personality identity construct while we live from birth to death. And then there's the us, the you that's all of us, that's the same true self, higher self, that is just the pure awareness that we can become aware of. So that's already immortal, but in terms of your identity here, you're never immortal. When you die, you die. It's just that I awareness that isn't, that is you, that has an ego personality identity construct, but the I awareness is everybody. It's all the same thing. It's just the pure awareness. And it's, at any level, it's always just I. And then when you have, an existence, instead of just being, which is just being is just pure awareness as consciousness, when you have an existence in existence, then you need an ego personality identity construct in order to interact. Because you're not just the pure I, the one, the all, you're an actual individuation. And an individuation, in order to be an individuation, it needs its own ego personality identity construct, which is a reflection of our individuation in the physical reality. So we have an ego personality identity construct, instead of remaining as part of the pure I awareness, where we're individuated, reality is created as individuated units of variability, diversity, and multiplicity in the existence reality of the universe. And as such, when greater complexity develops, greater expressions of consciousness can develop, and greater expressions of free will can develop. And then we have animals, and then we have the human being, which has the greatest capacity. So when you understand the two aspects of I, one is an identity, ego personality identity construct, and the other I is not an identity at all. It's not an identity. It's more identical. It's how we are all one and the same in that identical. Identical is idem, so I and id. Id is it, that one, and then idem, idem, which is the root for identity, and identical, you have the same oneness. So that one, and then the same, which is dem, so id, dem, idem, identical, is that one is the same. So you have the different... Anyways, I've mentioned this in other audios, and it'll be in the natural law thing to explain who we are. We have the identity as an ego personality identity construct that is different from everyone else because of the impositions, conditions that create an identity, right? You have an ID, an identity card. We're all different. That's one aspect of identity, level one. And then there's the higher aspect of identity, which is not the same kind of identity at all. It's identity in terms of identical, because we're all the identical I awareness, the pure awareness, the pure being, with no impositions, no conditioning, no knowledge, nothing. It's just pure being. It's pure awareness, pure consciousness. So that's how we're identical. That's why the one is identical. It's all one thing. It's that same one. So those are the two aspects of identity. So the reason I was talking about this was to differentiate how in immortality, yes, there's the sense of immortality of that identical I awareness, pure consciousness aspect that is immortal. Yeah, well, it exists forever. It's the basis of all creation, right, in this concept? Okay. But for us here, when we are dead in the coffin, there's no light of truth. There's no heat from the truth and justice, where we're cold, dark, blind, and dead in the coffin in the tomb. So we are revived, reborn, rebirthed, and also there's successive levels. We can be reborn continuously, which is why in my Truth is Love and other aspects of Wisdom is Right Action, I think, I talk about alchemy and how we can be reborn as a phoenix is reborn from the ashes. We destroy what our shadow aspects, and we reconstitute ourselves after disintegrating and deconstructing ourselves into ash, and then we're reborn as the phoenix. And we can do this continuously, over and over in our lives, as many times as we want, to remove what is impure, diseased, garbage, porous, putrefacted waste and toxins, and we remove that and take it out of our way of being because we recognize it does not serve us and others and what is right, good, and true. It does not serve human nature, true self, higher self. So we recognize that and we remake ourselves as clay. We can mark ourselves differently. And as we change, it changes our behavior. That's how we reflect ourselves. We change ourselves internally in the internal, quote, spiritual consciousness aspects of our ego personality identity as well, and then we become a reflection of that externally in our actions, and then we act differently. So we are reborn anew, rebirthed from the womb of the mother. What's the mother? Well, that's the creator, right? The feminine is the creator. It's not masculine. When you take a man and a woman, where's the creation happening? Well, it happens inside of the woman. So the feminine aspect, that's why Ma'at is the highest concept, and it goes back really far in Egypt, even past all the creations of other gods and other personifications. This is an original aspect of truth and order as a reflection of the feminine, which is the creator of life. There's always the dual aspect of the masculine and feminine, even in Ma'at and even in Ra. Ra wears a feathered headdress of seven feathers by four rows of seven feathers. Again, 4 and 7, 11, they're encoding this aspect of, you know, the 11 dimensions and the seven implicate order and the four explicate order of space and time. And this relates to other esoteric aspects of the seven spiritual laws and the four elements, and how the four elements are how we create our world through our care and desire, which leads, and our thoughts, and it leads to our deeds, our actions, and the changes in time, and that's the resulting consequences in reality, and that's how we create reality. That's how the four elements create reality. But it's based on us. It's not the four elements are the basis of the water and the earth and the trees and the ground and our bodies. No, no, no. That's how people take symbolism and they make it literal, because they don't understand symbolism. They don't understand how symbols were created to reflect reality. And then it all becomes literal because people don't understand what symbols are used for. They're there to reflect reality. And then it becomes a literal story because they don't understand allegorical symbolism and metaphors, which is the whole basis of the origin of narratives and story. They're not literal. So I was talking about Ra and having a feminine and masculine aspects in these personifications of these gods. They're all personifications, anthropomorphizing in order to relate aspects of reality and ourselves through models we are familiar with, which are ourselves, people or other animals, which is why they started off as animals and then they became people, and they had people with animal heads and animal references, because these are just metaphorical, allegorical ways to symbolically represent aspects of reality through other aspects of reality that we are more familiar with. Because when you're dealing with abstracts and universals and concepts, you need to relate it back down to the ground, to actual symbols in reality, to the particulars. So that's how we understand greater universals. People need to understand symbolism and understand story narratives and how they don't reflect literal reality. They are symbolic narratives, allegories. And this goes back way into history. This is the start of understanding reality, is through a mythopoeic narrative. So Ma'at, you know, it's the feminine principle, but it has the masculine and feminine aspects. But it's the feminine, it's the overarching principle. And that's why it's truth, order, and justice is Ma'at, which is going to be a big part of the natural law presentation I'll be doing. I'm trying to go to the source of the conceptions of natural moral law and the conceptions of karma and how it's falsely represented, how karma is falsely interpreted. Because everyone thinks these concepts are literal, because the concepts that became literal were derived from concepts and allegories and metaphors which were not literal at an ancient time, where symbols were used with understanding with what symbols were for. And then later people forget, oh, well, the symbols, they don't represent literal reality. It's not a literal history. It's a story and narrative using symbols to allegorically and metaphorically and parabolically, you know, Jesus and his parables, it's to make reference to concepts and higher order understanding based on the particulars of reality that we can understand through symbols that have a direct reference with reality. So it's people really don't understand how symbols work. So that's why the karma and the reincarnation. No, it's a false understanding where you think that you live on forever, but you don't. It's the I awareness, the pure awareness, the just being. Well, we're all the same. It's all the being is all the same. It's all the sourced from the larger being. It's just a water drop or a spark, you know, symbolically referencing it. It's not literally that. It's just another symbolic reference to try to help us understand this concept. So we're not reincarnating ourselves. It's the whole, all the one is always reincarnating, always and always and always. It's, you know, recycling itself, you could say, if you want to look at it that way. So, but in another aspect, when we look at ourselves here from our birth to death and how we can remake ourselves, yes, we can be reborn. We can get into the afterlife, which is after being dead in the tomb in the coffin, you get reborn in the womb of the mother, the womb of the feminine, which Ma'at, in the sky, in the air, and Nut, the sky, and that's where Ra was born every morning. The sun was born from Nut, the sky goddess. She was at the top, and at the bottom was Geb, who is the earth god. That's why the feminine is air, and the masculine is earth. People have it wrong. They think that air is a male element. No, it's feminine. And they think earth is a female. No, they think earth is a feminine. No, it's masculine. I gotta make a distinction between female and male. We're not talking about people. It's personifications of concepts. It's like masculine and feminine aspects of consciousness. It's not male and female. These are personifications based on a predominant nature of men in the biological boundary limits and laws and how we instinctually